Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
That sounds familiar. I think I've seen the program before. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome back for a bright new year of Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby Neer, who are on here with me. Happy New Year, guys.
Same Happy New Year to you, too.
For those of you, I fail to do this sometimes. For those of you that would like to participate in the program, the phone number is 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728, and you can come on and speak for yourself. If you want to have a mouthpiece do it for you, you can email me, talk@ksav.org. Going to be a new topic tonight. What is it? It's going to be Never Say Die, Never Say
never
Goodbye.
Never wave goodbye.
All right, I should know better than to try to get these things. The hosts are the moderators of the Fugitive Views and Reviews Yahoo discussion group, and we'll go to them in 1 second. I want to remind people that I hope this is just the beginning of really a good night of programming on KSAV. So we're starting off here with Talking Fugitive. At 6:30 is going to be Perfectly Frank, and tonight will be part one of the interview with Frank's musical director, Vincent Falcone, as a special guest. At 7:30, Talking Television with Dave White, which is my favorite show, will feature The Rifleman. We've got several good guests scheduled for tonight's program. And at 9 o'clock Pacific time, midnight on the East Coast, A New Sidewalks of San Francisco. That's just a short little fun segment, 15 minutes. So all new programming, and I hope that all of you will stay with us for the whole 3 hours plus. All right, Bob, you had something that you wanted to start off with, so you go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say that one of the reasons why we picked Never Wave Goodbye as a topic for tonight, at least part one of it, I'd like to do part two in a couple of several weeks, is the fact that not only is this a classic episode from the series, but it seems to be one that people constantly bring up. I mean, we did reviews of this 2 years ago in our group, and it still comes up today from time to time, even when we're discussing something else. And it seems to be, and I didn't really realize it until I started the group, that this was an episode so well-loved. We run viewer polls on all of the episodes as we do them in reviews, and I went back in our poll section of the group to see how this one did, and of the people who voted, 75% of them voted for voted 10, which is the highest rating that we give any episode. Only a couple of people voted less than that, and that's the best rating. We've done 60 episodes. We've done half the series, and that's the best rating by far of anything on there. Only Nightmare at North Oak, another classic that comes up later, comes even close to this. So this is really much loved, and actually surprised me. But I think one of the reasons why it's so memorable is because this is only the fourth episode. This part one is the fourth episode of the series, and everything in it, it's kind of leads up to what's coming in the series. Things that you see the next season, all get their beginning here. All of the things that make the series great are in these two episodes, number 4 and 5, and we don't know, that finally, people who were watching it, I was there, first time was on, have no idea what we're watching. We don't know what we're really in for, but this really, I think, sells the show. I mean, once you see this two-part episode, it's virtually impossible to stop watching it. This just sells it right away, which I think is amazing, because it takes a TV series a season at least, for characters to develop, for people to get interested, but this one just takes off immediately. So on our show from time to time, we want to do classic episodes and discuss them, but this is the place to start, because this is literally where it all does begin. So I know you've got some emails to read, so go ahead.
All right, I'll start with that, and I will also alert you that we've got Ken on the phone.
Oh,
so you call for him whenever you like.
Okay.
I'm going to start with this one because it's the shortest. This is from Clay. Got to be somewhere down south because he's got a Bell South address.
Okay.
So Clay from Parts Unknown says, I enjoy listening to Talking Fugitive. Just a quick and possibly humorous comment. I watched the episode tonight for the show, so I guess that's the Never Wave Goodbye, and one thing was noticeable to me. For a professionally trained doctor of medicine or pediatrician, Kimball broke the news of the heart attack rather bluntly. So that's his comment. You want to comment on
that? Yeah, I'll let Kitty do that, because I know that's a big deal with her. Go ahead, Kitty.
Oh, well, for me, actually, I don't even remember that aspect of it that much. What always sticks out with me with this episode with Kimball is that here he is in the hospital and Karen's uncle has died, and his reaction is to do basically nothing. I mean, he doesn't try to, you know, the person's breathing out his last and he doesn't even run out of the room to yell for a nurse to come in or for a doctor or anything. And as Bobby said, that in this particular episode, you see elements that you'll see in other episodes of the series. And one of the things that I have noticed is that Kimball seems to be very selective when it comes to being a doctor. Sometimes he's right there ready to save somebody, and then the next minute in another episode, he just is perfectly content to watch somebody die.
Well, let me just defend him a little bit here, because I watched the episode yesterday. And the scene you're talking about, Lars, that's Karen's uncle, is in the hospital. And he's already in really bad shape, and he's in the room with him, and Karen is there. And he says a few things before he expires, and then he just kind of turns his head to the side, and he's just gone. And what Kimball does is, he simply checks his pulse. He picks up his hand, and he checks his pulse, and that's it. And everybody knows he died. I don't know that I can be that tough on him, because I don't know what he could have done. I mean, it's so understated. It's not like, something happened all of a sudden and they could have saved him. But I would agree that he does, he does kind of stand there. As far as the scene as the emailer is talking about, yeah, that's also in there, too, in which he simply tells her that he had a heart attack. He doesn't break it to her gently. He doesn't say something is wrong, something has happened, which, you know, you would say to most people so that you wouldn't shock them. Doesn't tell her to sit down, do anything. He simply bluntly says it right away. So it is kind of odd. And as you and I both know, there are other times in the series in which sometimes he's a wonderful doctor. You wish he was your doctor. And other times you wish he wasn't your doctor, because he just kind of stands there.
Yeah, I mean, there are times when I think about it, it's like if I was being rushed into the ER in critical condition, David Janssen's Richard Kimball is not necessarily the doctor I would want on duty.
Yeah, and that's the writer's fault. I think the writers don't really have a feel for what a doctor should do. So they just kind of, they go with whatever they got in front of them, and it looks a little odd from time to time. But in this particular scene, it is true that he doesn't do anything. Could he have done anything? I don't know. The man dies so quickly. If he'd run out of the room, I don't think he really could have done anything. But that is a good point. Dave, you said Ken is on the line?
Yes. You want him now?
Yeah, bring up Ken. All right, Ken
from Vista, California. Going to have his own show, I think, pretty soon on KSAV. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Dave.
Well,
hi,
you're on with everybody, so you go right ahead.
Ken, I can't imagine why you're calling in about Never Wave Goodbye. I just don't get it.
I think I have the most post on that episode in the series, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hi, Kitty.
Hi.
Hey, I just want to get to my main point right away. I'm glad you're doing this classics episode. There are many classics in the series, but in my opinion, this is the best episode of the entire series. And you know why? It's because of Susan Oliver's performance.
Why am I not surprised to hear that?
Oh, what a shock.
But also, I want to say this, too. My main point is, I think Susan Oliver is the best guest actor or actress in the entire series. She did a the best job of all time, because what she did was, you're right, Bob, she sold the series to whoever watches. You watch that episode, and you are just touched in your heart, really. And it's because of her. Because look at Kimball, you know, he's on the run, right? He escaped from prison, or he escaped from the train wreck. He's got Gerard breathing down his throat. And so what happens? He comes across this town. He meets, some nice people. He's working. And then he falls in love with Susan Oliver. And so Kimball has the biggest dilemma of all time. What is he going to do? And so, the relationship he has with Susan, you know, and then the storyline, it just plays out. I was just so touched by the entire story. What do you guys think?
Well, I certainly agree with all of that. And if, we may have to do our one whole show on Susan Oliver, because if I go off about her, we'll just eat up all the time and nobody will get to say a thing. I think there's a lot of work here with her performance in this. First of all, of course, she is gorgeous. That's number one. So you notice her immediately. And so there's something to be said for that alone. I mean, even if she did a bad job. But this is kind of a multi-layered performance. She does a lot in here. She's not only a love interest, but she's also a helper. I mean, it seems to me in the story that she really genuinely wants to help him. Because whatever plan he comes up with, he decides he has to go. She's unhappy about that, but I think she's prepared to accept it. But then at the end, early in this episode, he decides that maybe this time he'll stay. And so she's willing to help him no matter what. She'll go along with anything, not only because she wants to be with him, I mean, that's a part of it, but also because she genuinely wants to help. That's a difference from other love interests, especially Suzanne Pleshette in the later episode, who is really kind of self-serving. She just wants to run off with him because she wants him, period. If you really wanted any help to get away, it's Susan Oliver you wanted to go to. And I think that's what makes the difference in this story. She's more than just a love interest. She's much more than that. What do you think, Kitty?
Oh, I agree. In fact, I think her, the character of Karen, I think kind of also laid the groundwork for how they wrote other love interests in the series as well. Because, you know, she was probably the first one who really, really did try to help him and felt something for him. You know, we had the episode prior to that called The Other Side of the Mountain, where certainly the Sandy Dennis character helped him out. She caused the distraction for Gerard. But it wasn't quite the same. I mean, she kind of was just looking at him as a ticket to leave when he made her see she could always leave. You know, it wasn't really that type of a relationship. You know, whereas in this one, you definitely have the feeling is mutual type of love interest.
Well, Susan Oliver was a very good actress. You know, before we got on the air tonight, I went back to the Internet Movie Database to check her credentials, which I've done many times. And over her career, she was in 121 different guest starring portrayals in some of the most classic series that have ever been on TV. I mean, in 1963 alone, which was when she was in this particular episode, she was in 10 different shows. And I mean, if you go there to read it, you really should go to read it, because it's a who's who and a what's what of classic TV programs. She was in Dr. Kildare. She was in Ben Casey. She was in Rawhide. She was in Route 66. She was on Alfred Hitchcock. I mean, you go down the list, and if you're old enough, you know every one of these series, and I remember seeing her constantly, and always as a love interest. She was always the girlfriend, and of course everybody knows her from being in the Star Trek pilot. And she just could slip in and out of parts so easily and never wave goodbye. You don't know her, we've never seen her before, but she sells it right away. I can believe immediately that she really cares about him. That's a tribute to her. She's really quite amazing, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. She's very talented. Did she ever have her own show? I don't know.
No. She was always a guest star and everything, and then later in her life,
right,
she was on a daytime soap opera for some time. You know, she died in 1990. She was only 58 years old.
That's a shame.
She was also
yeah.
a pilot. She won awards for being a woman pilot. She set records. She wrote a book. She directed a couple of episodes of MASH. I don't know what the woman didn't do.
All right. Let's see. We're going to take a quick time out here. Okay. Ken, do you have anything more you want to hold on, or did you get it all in?
That's enough for
okay.
now. I know you've got others. So I want
all
to
right.
Thanks again, guys.
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Let's take a real quick time out. You don't even have time to go get a snack. And then we'll be right back and talk a little more Fugitive on Sherevision Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave White, your host of Talkin' Television with Dave White, broadcast every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on KSAV. Each week, television guru Tim Carmody and I discuss the programs, series, stars, and more that our audience wants to hear about. Expert guests, your phone calls and emails make this a fun 90 minutes of live programming. So schedule some time on Tuesday evenings to tune in to Talkin' Television with Dave White. We're working hard to put television on the radio.
All right, we're back talking Fugitive on KSAV. Next week, Talking Fugitive is going to be back in 2 weeks on the 24th. And in this time spot next week, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to debut really what promises to be a great new show. It's called Getting to Know You with Susan McCrae. I won't go into a lot of details about it. She's going to have on guests for interviews, and next week will be Linda Gray, who I know starred in Dynasty, among other shows. So that'll be next week from 6 to 6:30 Pacific Time for the debut show on the 17th. Okay, back to Fugitive. Well, I've got an email here. This is from Rob in Westchester. Rob says, this episode, referring to Never Wave Goodbye, this episode, while a love story between Richard Kimball and Karen, is kick-started by Gerard. The part I would like to point out in episode one is Gerard's intelligence and tenacity. We see him dog Kimball on a hunch, and it pays off by a left-behind matchstick. The viewers early on in this series get an idea of how stressful Kimball's situation is, in that he can be potentially caught simply by overlooking something as simple as a matchstick. This makes his faking his death to get away from Gerard a very believable strategy for Kimball, for surely he is doomed by this pursuit. And if you are going to fake your death and start your life over, why not with Susan Oliver?
Well, yeah, I certainly agree with that. It is true. The only thing I would take exception to that, and it's not valid for this story, is that there are other times in the series in which I don't think Gerard is all that smart. He does a few stupid things later on. But it is true that in this particular story, he goes to see the one-armed man, the wrong one-armed man that Kimball went to see in the jail. And Kimball had given him a match to light a cigarette, and the matchstick has the word sales on it, and that leads Gerard back to where Kimball is, which is a sailmaker in Santa Barbara. And, yeah, that's true. I don't know that most detectives would pick up on that so quickly, because all he does is look down and he sees the matchstick, and immediately he figures, oh, well, you know, I'll just trace this back and I'll find him there. So, yeah, I have to agree with that. It adds something to the show to imagine that Gerard is smart enough to track him down. It's not just, you know, I think that adds something to it. Don't you agree, Kitty?
Yeah, and while we're on the subject of the one-armed man that he went to see in jail, I think another really good point in this particular episode is that at this point in time, nobody knows who the one-armed man is.
That's right.
And I thought this aspect of it is actually a very good teaser, because at this point in time, only Richard Kimball knows what the one-armed man looks like.
Right.
None of the viewers do. And so Richard Kimball goes to see this guy, and so we we as the audience see that, okay, this is a one-armed man, but he's not the one-armed man. And, you know, and I liked how that all played out. And I think the chase scene in that jail is fabulous. I mean, it's so well done that they did a bit of a remake of it in the Fugitive movie with Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones.
And, you know, this is the first, this is actually this moment when they see each other, Kimball's in the elevator and Gerard is already there in the office in the jail there, is their first face-to-face confrontation that we see in the series. They'll have a later one, of course, at the end of part two. And I think that's the most important thing because, boy, and the tension that builds up, because we know that they're both in the building, and are they going to run into each other or not? That's always been one of my favorite moments. It really, and you're right about the one-armed man. When he goes to see him, I watched this yesterday, like I said, and we don't really know whether he's the right guy. He may be the right person for all we know, because later on, of course, we know what he looks like, but, you know, up until that time, that adds a lot of suspense to it. Go ahead, Dave. You got another one?
Yes. Now, this one is unsigned here, but we accept anonymous emails as well.
Well, maybe he's just embarrassed to be seen with us or something.
It says, of all the episodes I watched in the early 1960s, Never Wave Goodbye is the one that still stands out as the best. I recall two scenes in particular. Kimball's heart-stopping ride down the elevator of the county jail to escape Gerard. He says there's a quote there, your father is there because he made a mistake, close quotes. I don't know what that refers to. And his heartbreaking goodbye to Karen at the seashore. The episode's only weaknesses are the distracting business between Gerard and his family, which I guess shows the depth of his Kimball mania, and Gerard's rather preposterous going over the side in the life raft in dense fog to find Kimball, which shows his obsession is practically a mental illness. He also comments, I recall KTLA's announcement, Channel 9 in the Los Angeles area, of Susan Oliver's death in 1990 by lung cancer. The announcer, Hal Fishman, was a pilot. Like Susan, he recalled many happy days of flying out of Van Nuys Airport with her. Susan, like Jansen, are sorely missed.
Well, let me skip by his later part of his email about the goodbye at the end, because we'll do that on our next show, because that's part two. But the part he's talking about at the beginning there is very early in this episode. We see Gerard first of all, he's talking to his son, whose name Flip, his name changes later on, becomes Phil Gerard Jr., and he's telling him that he can't take him on a camping trip because he's got to go chase after Kimball. Then we see him at home, and we see him with his wife, a different actress. So what does he have, Kitty? Doesn't he have, like, three different wives in the series?
Yeah, and this is the first one. She's
yes.
Blonde, and her name is Anne.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So we see him in there, and then this is a remarkable scene because we consider Gerard to be a very hard man during the series, but in this one scene, early in the series, he goes in and he talks to his son, a very little boy, who seems to grow up remarkably fast when he turns into Kurt Russell and later in the series. but he's just a little boy, and he's talking to him and explaining why he has to go, why he can't take him camping, and he leans over and he kisses him on the head. And this is so unlike Gerard, it's unbelievable. When you see this, it's you wonder who that is. It's just a striking moment. I didn't have a problem.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it either. I don't think it distracts from it. I mean, if anything, this episode also kind of gives it kind of rounds both of the characters out more as well. I mean,
yeah.
You find out that Gerard, he's not some guy who just sleeps at the police precinct waiting for Kimball sightings. He actually does have a life outside of it.
Let me interrupt you, guys. We've got about 4 minutes left, and I've got Linda from Pennsylvania on the phone.
Oh, hi, Linda.
Linda on. Welcome.
Hi.
Hey.
You guys have pretty much said a lot of what I was going to say. I particularly in this one, I like the contrast with Gerard, where he's so soft and gentle with his son, and then yet he turns around and becomes that absolutely relentless stalker of Kimball that we will see for the rest of the series. Once in a while, we see those flashes of normalcy, but I really admire Barry Morse for the absolute intensity he brings to every scene that he is in when he is after Kimball. And that conversation in the elevator, to me, is the absolute highlight of the entire series.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and it's not only that they see each other, it's the suspense that builds up. I don't know if you remember or not, but you know, when I watched it yesterday, there's a scene when they first both go into the courthouse there, or whatever that is, they pass each other by the elevator down in the lobby. Kimball gets in the elevator. This is before they see each other upstairs. Kimball gets in the elevator to go upstairs, and just as the door is closing, Gerard walks by. This is in the lobby. This goes by so fast you can miss it. And then it's later on that they have an actual face-to-face confrontation upstairs, and it's the way it's set up. It's the build-up. The camera pans in on the numbers of the floors they're on. One's on 10, one's on 13, and you're thinking to yourself, you get this dread over you that somebody's got to get out of there. Kimball's got to get out of there because he's headed right for trouble, and that I think is what makes the scene. It's not only that great moment when they see each other, but you know, don't leave out the bus chase that comes afterwards. I mean, the bus chase is terrific. I mean, it's location filming. They're right out on the street there, and you see Kimball and Karen on the bus, and you see Gerard chasing them. That to me is maybe the single best chase scene in the entire series. That's extremely exciting. I have an email to read from JC. I'm going to save it for our next show in a couple of weeks because we're running out of time. But he talks about the location filming in this particular episode, which adds an awful lot to it. Every chance they get, they're outside. They're really in the courthouse. They're really out in the street. They're really on the freeway. You know, they could have done it on a back lot. They didn't have to do that. So that really adds an awful lot to it. But you're right. That scene in the elevators is the first really exciting face-to-face confrontation. You never forget it, I think, not only because it's so well done, but because it is the first. Everything in this story that is the first, I think, means something. Those are the things you're going to remember. Oh, I remember the first time I saw them face-to-face. There's other times when it's equally as exciting, but there's something about that first time, and that really makes a difference.
I agree.
All righty.
Okay, Linda, is that it?
Yeah. That's it.
All right.
Nice talking to you.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
All right. Like I said, I have another email, but I'll save it for the next show because I know we're up against the clock.
All right. Well, we've got about 30 seconds.
Okay. And we'll do part two of the story next time because it's a two-part episode. And the second part is even more exciting than the first part.
All right. And that was what this one emailer was talking about with the... the goodbye or whatever.
Oh, yeah. That's at the very end.
All right. Okay, and the next program is going to be in 2 weeks on the 24th. Kitty and Bobby will return then. You already know the topic. It'll be part two of Never Wave Goodbye. I hope everybody will stay tuned because coming up next is Perfectly Frank and the interview, part one of the interview with Vincent Falcone. And, Bob, I know you're interested in The Rifleman, and that'll be on in 1 hour.
Yes, that was a favorite show of mine. I didn't particularly like Westerns, but I did like that one.
All right, good. Well, thanks a lot, guys. I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, and hopefully for those of you in the audience, I'll talk to you in 1 hour's time. Stick around on Sharavision Radio.